back onto the island of Dr. Moreau, Harvey Weinstein fell from power. And I thought after that happened, maybe karmically things start to balance. There's always one 150-pound gorilla waiting in line to, to be dealt with.
Yeah. So I read about the rumours about Dr. Moreau, so the rumours were true, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, it's early days.
Right.
From the point of view that we're still at the scripting stage.
Yeah. So, but they're still keen. They're still keen to get your vision of it.
Yeah, it's the bizarre part of it. And moreover, I've been hired back onto it by the producers of the original movie.
Right. Wow.
I've been hired back by Ed Pressman.
Oh, okay.
And the Edward R. Pressman Film Corporation.
Oh, that's good.
So it's, in fact, the people who essentially got rid of me 25 years ago.
Wow.
Have 25 years later reversed their decision.
Wow. Well, Ed seems like a nice, amiable sort of chap, so.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. I mean, it certainly levels the karma from the point of view that they've basically reversed their decision, which is something that I don't think has ever happened before in Hollywood history.
Yeah. Oh, well, look.
I don't think there's any.
Yeah. I mean, fingers crossed for you. Fingers crossed for you, mate. I really hope that. Give you a good go. Give you a fair go this time, anyway.
Well, let's see what happens. It's going to be for television.
Right. So, like a mini series.
So, the idea is to turn it into a 6-hour mini series.
All right, yeah. That seems to be what a lot of producers are looking for at the moment.
Well, it's where the heat is at the moment. It's, it's also the only chance it has of doing anything R-rated.
Right, yeah.
Like, one of the big problems on the previous Moreau was that it was PG-13.
Yes.
Which meant that some kind of crisis was always going to happen because there was no way that I was going to deliver a PG-13 movie.
Yeah.
Which, least this effectively liberated that.
Yeah.
And I'm writing the 6-hour show as if it's as if there's no limitation.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not thinking about budget or what's sane or acceptable as far as civilized human conduct is concerned.
Right.
So it won't be the same Moreau. It'll be an update.
Yeah.
An upgrade for the 21st century.
Yeah. But do you think the groundswell because of the documentary had a part to play in it?
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that David's film finally got something like the truth out there.
Yeah.
And that quashed a lot of the rumors.
Yeah.
Because up to that point, everyone had assumed that the two biggest assumptions people were making were that Marlon Brando was insane, that I was insane.
Right.
But zooming into the details, it's pretty obvious that Brando really had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he arrived way after I'd already been removed from production. All of my woes were down to very bad corporate politics.
Yeah.
Meet Val Kilmer, meet
bad
a typhoon. Essentially hadn't gotten out there. And I think also it was looking at the original design work.
Yeah.
And finally getting their heads around what it was that we were actually trying to do 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Because hitherto folk had basically assumed that whatever we were doing was completely insane.
Yeah.
Impracticable. Yeah. But now in a post-Planet of the Apes reboot, post-Guardians of the Galaxy universe, the original Moreau doesn't look as far out as it did.
No.
It's the notion of dogs with machine guns doesn't seem as heretical or as completely crazy as they thought it was originally. Now they can see that a raccoon with a big gun can be the most likable character in Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, I mean, I think we were just too soon. We were coming. Moreau came before Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And really before motion capture had really happened.
Yeah.
I think people simply didn't understand what we were doing.
Yeah.
The line producer on the original Moreau was super skeptical of all the time that he thought we were wasting on the creatures and on the storyboards and design work. And never really figured that was actually the movie.
Yeah.
That the core of the movie should have been the creature effects and the dog people.
Now maybe the time is more right than ever.
Fingers crossed, yeah. I mean, of course, all the same things will happen again. Once the script is completed, then it's going to go out to the different TV stations, and I'm sure there'll be massive corporate interference, just as there always is.
Yeah.
And we'll essentially have to deal with that.
Well, that Netflix is throwing some money around.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good time for trying it.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure what the weird requirement will be that will come in.
Yeah.
There's always something that comes in that's antithetical to the project. someone who is, has a fundamental objection to something you can't predict.
Well, Netflix and Amazon are the two big players at the moment, so they're looking for a lot of material. So it could end up with one of those very rarely.
Well, we'll roll the dice and see what comes out of the cup.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a chance.
Yeah.
And if we catch a fair wind, then there's a chance it could be a decent franchise for him.
Yeah.
Well, what the press been looking for.
Yeah, well, definitely a miniseries sort of lends it better to you being able to tell the story in total than having to cut it back.
Yeah, it's the only way. It's really the only way to actually get the whole story in there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's structural issues with the original Wells story anyway.
Yeah.
It's got a couple of structural problems when it comes to adapting it to cinema that no one's ever cracked.
Yeah.
Mostly because of the running time.
Yeah.
I mean, the way Wells structures the story is that we arrive on the island with the castaway, and we don't know what's going on in the island, and misunderstand the event, and spend the first half of the book essentially running away from Moreau, and being pursued by the beast people.
Yeah.
And it's only when the guys get finally cornered and captured halfway through the story that H.G. Wells pulls out this fat chapter entitled Dr. Moreau Explained,
right,
which comes about halfway through the book. And at the point where Dr. Moreau sits down and explains, we suddenly get the Island of Dr. Moreau backstory.
Right.
Which works in a 19th century novel. But on screen, there's like no way that you can get an hour into the movie and then suddenly go into a 40-minute flashback.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it would, that would definitely be something more like, you know, in your first, you know, if you're doing it episodically, that would be something more you'd try and tackle in your first episode, wouldn't you? The backstory of Moreau.
Yeah, so far all of the movie adaptations have just tacitly dropped that chapter.
Right.
And have ignored the Dr. Moreau Explains chapter, because there's just no way you can do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're either going to start with the Dr. Moreau Explains story, and then you basically know all the answers before the castaway gets there, which doesn't work.
Yeah,
and you can't have the broken back structure with the flashback coming halfway through. So that's why everyone's ignored it. And there's been one other thing as well, is that in the book the things don't wind up very fast. I mean, in all the movie versions, Dr. Moreau dies, the beast people rebel, and the house goes up in flames, and the castaway floats off in the dinghy.
Yeah.
Which happens in all three of the movie versions, but it's not at all what happens in the book.
No.
There's a Moreau dies about two-thirds of the way through the book, and then an awful lot more happens. And even after the principal monster, the hyena swine, is dead, and all the other humans are dead, the castaway is still trapped on the island for a considerable period of time at the end of the novel.
Yeah.
It's more in it goes more into, I guess, Robinson Crusoe or Papillon territory. Which is difficult for modern movies, but I love it when in stories when characters are trapped for 25 years or 15 years past or whatever.
Yeah.
Doing it for TV miniseries means you can have that kind of longer reach with the time frame where I can afford to have the castaway trapped on the island for a decade.
Well, I mean, look, mate, all I can say is that I hope that you get fair go this time, and you know, once you've jumped through the hoops, time will tell.
Yeah, we'll see what happens next. It feels like the next.
Like you said, once you jump through, I have to jump through all the hoops first. Once you get past that, then you'll know where you stand then.
It's always going to be 1,000 miles of rough. I mean, once we jump and attract the corporate funding, we'll then have to find a new island, which then means the Rose House, the Beast People, redesigning the Beast People.
Yeah.
And presumably enslaving another local population, whoever they'll be this time, whether it'll be an appropriate island or people in Fiji, putting them through the dehumanizing process to send them back into animals.
Right. So
it's a long, horrible road.
Yeah. North Queensland probably out of the question again.
Very foolhardy.
Might be some bad vibes too, Richard.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure there's bad vibes for everyone. We'll see how the project comes together with the pastors and where the money is coming from as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's no reason why Richard Stanley's Dr. Moreau can't come true now.
Well, I hope for my sake that Stanley makes money.
Yeah.
We'll see what comes next.
Is Ed Canfield the director?
Yeah, that's part of the deal.
Right.
So I get to get first refusal and has to give me the first shot at it.
Oh, well, that's good. But like I've said, I hope you get a good shot, at least as they say, a fair crack of the whip this time round.
Yeah, it'd be nice to actually have to shoot the thing.
Yeah. get more than close. Get further than close.
Yeah, I mean, we've been pretty close before.
Yeah, at least.
I mean, we were there.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be in the can anymore. That'll probably be all digital nowadays, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. We don't have film anymore.
But anyway, part of the reason I wanted to have another word to you is I recently got to see the Other World, finally, your documentary.
Right, wow.
Yeah, because it's finally available Blu-ray and DVD and all that sort of thing now, which is good.
Yeah, it's been a while coming.
Yeah, because I noticed the date that you made it and the date that it's been released is there was that a struggle to get someone to distribute it for you?
Partly because it was initially made for fun. Yeah. The intention was to distribute it by a French company.
Right.
A guy named Fabrice Lambeau, who basically shoot some more material and string it together.
Right.
But the initial proviso was
right.
So they could qualify for something. Like, ironically, Yurani, the character, speaks perfectly good English in real life.
Right.
But in the documentary, he's speaking French. It's qualified for some form of subsidy or reclaim their money somehow.
Right.
So it was actually made for a French market, done in French, and then whatever French producer showed no interest in distributing it.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, after they'd basically reclaimed their money, left it on the shelf. Mm. And eventually it took an American company to build something else.
Right.
And then subsidized it back into fucking English.
Yeah. That what's his name you mentioned, that Yurani, he's an interesting cat.
Yeah, no, he really steals the show from me.
I personally liked the scene where he was trying to get that that looked like an action figure or something chained to the bit of thing, but he couldn't make it work.
Yeah, it always happens when you're on camera.
Yeah, so he took the shits and sort of goes, you know, gives up.
Yeah, no, he's very good on camera, Your Honor. I would like to use him at dramatic level if I ever done.
No.
Like if I was shooting a I think Yurani would make a very good some kind of demented medieval character.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's, with his pink nail polish and his blue eyeshadow and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, he's a bit of an alchemical hermaphrodite.
Oh, okay.
I think that he's been single for 30 years or something thereabout, living on his own, and at some point that decade ago, he decided he was going to be a hermaphrodite rather than man and started painting his nails and wearing dress.
Right.
But he doesn't depilate, so it's all the same.
No, I liked how he was sort of introduced to this little sorcerer, and he you found the old VHS artwork sort of pinned up everywhere or whatever it was.
Yeah, that was what drew me in to begin with. I mean, I'm a fan of the movies, so I actually got what he was on. But yeah, he was pinning up Lucio Fulci boxed up from trees and some real leather. He had made a little shrine to him. This is one of the more beautiful movies.
Yeah.
Yes, he had made a whole little stone shrine, and inside from the French release title of The Passion of Beatrice, very nice little shrine with the candles and the stone around.
Right. Nah, he was.
Otherwise, the Beyond, which he's added in silver pen on the outer hanging the Buddha going somewhere and extends the charm. So yeah, I was pretty impressed.
He's got a pretty
he's always been doing stuff with the dog.
He's got a pretty impressive little property there.
Yeah. Now he managed to get all that land for eight francs. For a nominal sum back.
Wow.
Back in the 90s somewhere. Yeah. They've been trying to kill it with abandons.
I liked your credit on the film, but instead of a director, it was réalisateur.
Yeah, this was thanks to the film industry being targeted by French television.
Yeah, because normally they put that credit only film by, you know, Richard Lee. But Rilla Sator, they don't put up too often.
No, they don't, do they?
No, it adds a bit of class to it, doesn't it?
But yeah, it's a shame that France doesn't have the gumption to go ahead and make a reality TV show out of that. This place would have made great reality TV if only it was in America.
No, totally. Because, I mean, it starts wonderfully with you sitting there saying, you know, this is the, you know, I'm going to tell you about the strangest thing that ever happened to me. it begs that could be a show in itself. People just, you know, line up and sit there in front of the camera and, you know, this is the strangest thing that ever happened to me, and they go on with it. And every episode is a, you know, a tale unto itself of the, you know, the weird and the wonderful, as they say.
Yeah, the whole white lady business was difficult to deal with. It still is. Mm. I mean, me and Scarlett made it for them to come out and talk about it.
Yeah.
But a lot of the other folk who have seen the same things decided that it was a bad idea and got pretty quiet. But we listened to the talk on camera.
Right.
And, passed away for a few reasons. But, healthy things like that, but most of them are crying.
And
for me, it was one defining moment when essentially the take to be the supernatural stepped across the line and kind of made itself apparent so blatantly, difficult to get away
from. Yeah.
Like, in that circumstances, had I been alone, I would have convinced myself afterwards I'd had a flashback or a temper family. But having gone at the American girl and seen the same thing made it possible for me to convince myself afterwards that I was crazy or had been hallucinating.
Yeah. I like how she took off and left you. I like how she took off and left you there.
It takes some time. Yeah, at the tail of it, the second time round, yeah.
Yeah, and you found yourself naked, you were saying, with no clothes on, and those tourists were coming up the mountain with their flashlights on.
Yeah, I had my American Werewolf in London moment. Yeah, summer of 2008. That's where I decided to move here.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't take out their cameras.
Yeah, the tourists didn't see me.
Okay.
They went straight like that, flashing up their heads. They I was right there and I picked up my stuff. And they had to come up the upper army line. And when I suddenly introduced myself, the guy freaked out like he'd had a mile. He had to go. Yeah, it was bizarre. We find that happens a lot on the mountain. Sometimes other people can't see you.
Right, even though you're in relatively close proximity.
Yeah, you kind of, I guess, you start to go behind that predator vision shield thing, whatever it is that comes down.
Oh, okay.
I mean, a lot of the time, some of the shit I've seen up there on the other occasion, I've documented on the phone, I've seen movement, but I've not seen what's creating the movement.
Okay.
It's very like the thing you see in Predator.
All right, yeah.
Or when an animal moving in the undergrowth, and you can't see the animal, but you see the movement of the undergrowth as it moves along. It's very strange. You see ripples in the foliage, or what looks like a sort of blur or a ripple. You tell there's something happening there, but you can't quite flip.
No.
And then just when you tell yourself there's nothing really there, your eyes are playing close to the moves, or it crushed the bronze or something, and I'm scared the crap out of you again, but I don't know what that is. I assume it's something that beyond the limits of our perception,
right.
Or is slightly outside of paradigm we're in. There's also been a number of calls by people over the years, other folk not being them.
Right.
Like coming down from the castle and the traumatized face, realizing other folk looking past like they don't exist, which I've heard from three or four people.
Right.
And a couple of times myself where I went up to people on the mountain right that night with the tourists and said, folks me or just wanted to come to the first out because their point of view popped out of nowhere.
Right.
Yeah,
incredible.
But yeah, I don't know what that's about.
No.
Some of the natural disorientation that goes on up there. There's also an acoustical problem.
Right.
Like, sometimes people can be screaming about your name or shouting for help when they're a few feet away. Nobody's here.
Wow.
But at the same time, you can sometimes hear conversation going on between people as they're walking their foot cars down in the bottom at the bottom of the mountain.
Right.
Sometimes the voices play at the bottom of the mountain. So when you hear the disorientation going on from the people that just come, the things which should be very loud and much closer to you sometimes just clear to us. They cut them out and blocks them.
Right.
And we get solar phenomena too. There's light phenomena and around the solstice and in the Taurum. And all of that makes me wonder if there isn't some kind of awesome irregularity in space-time. It's some kind of ripple in the fabric of reality. That's the sort of passage of found and light.
No. And do you still feel, like you say at the end of the film, you're still keen to have another experience like that up there?
Well, that's what I was getting at the beginning. The Otherworld deals with an event that happened summer of 2007,
right,
which means there's been a 10-year lag to the present day,
right,
which means it's gone through a number of strange phases.
Right.
And since the movie, we've had a number of other encounters and fairly regularly. I'd say that there's been at least one outstanding, far-fetched event pretty much every year. So,
really?
Now, on a good full moon up there in August, yeah.
Wow.
Which was pretty out there. I last saw the Aquarius Ballroom last summer.
Right.
In the summer of 10.
Wow.
There have been a number of white lady sightings.
Right. And was it a similar...
Yeah, I get reports from other people as well. The last reported one was a young Catalan couple who are up here for anniversary of the fall of Castle. They're very quiet and light, and they bought a bunch of flowers on the altar and made some offerings, and then they were sat in the tower room.
Right.
And then they reported the faint direction, a warm wind, the very sweet smell like rose lilies. The lady of the couple reported a present. The guy didn't see anything. Both were smelling this very sweet smell, like rose or a slight hint of almond.
Okay, right, yeah.
Which, like the solar phenomenon, it's something connected to Marian apparition. Well,
right.
People, when they see the Virgin Mary, the sweet Virgin Mary at places like Fatima, similar report of sun turning black, or people not knowing what night or day it's orientation of
right.
I've been looking at a lot of Marian because I realized that devout Catholics have apparitions of the White Lady in under very similar circumstances.
Right.
We're very close to Lord, which is here in the Pyrenees of South of France.
Okay, right.
Which is now kind of like a Catholic supermarket where they sell icons of the Virgin because of the beginning of the 20th century.
Right. That's where all the people come to think.
I'm starting to think that it's a fairly widespread phenomenon.
Right. That's the Lourdes. That's where they can. They think they can come and get healed there, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why. There's no base for believing you'll be healed at Lourdes.
Right.
I mean, in a lot of Marian apparitions, as with the encounter with the lady in the Grotto of Sardinel and Lourdes, often the children die. Like in the version of Fatima, I think some of the kids died. That's the answer.
Right.
I mean, at Lourdes, Bernadette's super mother died following her childbirth.
Right.
And I think she herself died of asthma.
Right.
I mean, she got to grow up, but she didn't live old.
As far as I know, nobody got healed.
Right.
Nobody threw down their crop and suddenly walked. None of the participants were blessed with longevity.
Right. No, I first heard...
But when the Catholic Church eased on, they started ruining cripples and people from all over the world to come there and to pay good money to, in the hope they might somehow heal.
Yeah.
Looking at the fact, I see no documented account of anyone there being healed at Lourdes, despite the widespread belief that somehow it's healing.
Yeah. Now, I first heard about it. My great-grandfather was struck down as a young man, an invalid, and he was his life's ambition before he died after that was to get over there, and he thought if he could be bathed in the water or whatever it was, that he would be fully restored. But he never got there, unfortunately.
I think it's a money-making scam by the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And a very unfortunate one, because it's the way that human beings and organized religion suffer from encounters with the other world. I don't doubt that Bernadette and Sepulchre thought that being creepy and inexplicable in that cave way back in the beginning of the 20th century. Initially, she didn't want to talk about it, but her sister ratted her out to her mother and said Bernadette saw something in the cave. And then the mother's first reaction was to beat the living crap out of both girls and try to get them to become sensible and to stop talking about it. But Bernadette refused. Got the idea that she was seeing something insane, The clever mother became convinced that the children were telling the truth, that they want something in the cave,
right.
But they still didn't know what it was. Initially, the mother's thought it was one of the souls of the lost trapped in purgatory, and they thought maybe special friends would have in the church try and let the spirit rest or just drive it away.
No.
Then the father found out that the mother and the kids were trying to believe this thing was in the cave. And then the dad's first reaction, as far as I could tell, was also to pick the big crab out of the mouth to try to get it to shut up and stop going on.
Yeah.
And after Bernadette and the other kids found to find out about the apparition, then it reacted to still rocks. Some of the kids tried throwing stones. The apparition, and they
that's Shakespearean.
Then eventually, they harmonized this with their Christian faith.
Okay.
The intervention of the priest were able to reconcile this little cave with someone called the Virgin Mary. And then it was brought over into the Catholic Church. I mean, the very first thing the authorities did is they tried to built a fence around, a metal fence around it to stop other people from going in there and presumably encountering whatever it was. And then since the original, the Holy Roman Church turned Lord into like a supermarket.
It's always the way.
I mean, it's a lot of different shops selling the Lord's water and statues.
Right.
And there's an endless progression of people in wheelchairs with carers being taken through the place. So they attract a huge amount of tourist people, and they're figured out how to make a profit out of it.
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced it's a terribly good response to the initial encounter of the problem of the kids seeing the white ladies.
That's very, very Shakespearean of them, you know. We do it wrong to show it acts of violence.
Yeah, so I guess here in Montego, it's been a fruitless battle for the month the documentary has made.
Right, right. And you've been travelling a bit around yourself, around the different film festivals around there. So I've seen with your posts and whatnot, you went up to Transylvania, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a lifelong ambition.
Right.
I managed to fulfill sort of bucket list things here.
Right.
I finally made it. Transylvania.
Right, the Dracula's castle, eh?
And I finally made it from Rhode Island to Lovecraft himself.
Right.
Yeah, both places I wanted to visit ever since I was a child.
Yeah.
The books I was reading as a kid.
Yeah.
So actually getting to see Vladimir Putin's home country.
Yeah.
It's yeah, very moving.
How's your Lovecraft picture, is that still in the works or not, or is that stalled too, is it?
It's in another one of these really our states of affairs where I don't know if everyone else's lives are like this, but my life's been full of these kind of strange circular eddies that don't make normal sense. I mean, the problem with colour is it's slightly too expensive for its own name.
Right. So probably
kind of like a medium range movie. It doesn't have much of a budget because it's got tentacles.
Yeah.
A minimum degree of technical excellence we want to bring to the
Right. So probably.
What happened was this year, somewhere around August, it attracted the interest of. We finally managed to get a male lead and read the script and liked the project.
Right.
I can't tell you the identity of the male lead.
No, that's fine. Was he big?
No matter, Hollywood.
But he was he big time though?
Big enough to get the movie made, yeah.
Okay, right.
Instantly recognizable.
Right.
But the problem being that the stars
ended up. Okay, right.
It's sort of tricky to film from the very, very on.
Right.
And we've locked into the cycle where we're trying to get date with a star.
Okay, right.
Where we need to get our lead man to say, yes, I'm doing this, and I'm available here.
Right.
To pick a period of 5 time out of the calendar so that we can then say, yes, we will shoot the movie here, and
I don't think
we'll fall into
play. Right. So you find yourself rather like...
For the last 6 months, man.
You find yourself like you were in the transit lounge.
Yeah, the man has been...
waiting for Bruce Willis.
Sorry. No delay. Yeah.
Waiting for Godot.
Yeah, we don't... The company doesn't want to cut their losses and move on because it's an extra star and could get the movie made.
Right, right.
So they're not willing to say, oh, this isn't working, we've got to move on. They're hanging in there in the hopes that they can make work.
Right.
Same time, we've just been, tumbling in a circle while the project stays in place.
Okay. So he's basically big enough for them to hang the whole picture on, hey?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Which they pretty much have. I mean, one of the reasons that Colour Out of Space hasn't ever gotten made is that when I wrote the script, I wrote it to be faithful to Lovecraft.
Right, yeah.
And also, I wanted it to be scary. So I've never really made a horror movie. Yeah. I've never made a proper scary movie.
Right.
I mean, Hardware is a sci-fi horror hybrid. A police procedural, road movie, drive-in, horror hybrid thing. Neither of these movies exist just to scare the audience.
No. You were looking at
it. I thought, okay, this time round, I really want to do
something more.
Just one genuinely scary movie once in my life.
Yeah, middle of the road horror.
So yeah, I tried to actually push those buttons, but in the course of that, I completely failed to write any Hollywood characters.
Oh, okay. Oh, no.
None of the characters have redemptive arc.
Oh, okay.
Everyone fucking dies pretty much. You can't really salvage a redemptive arc out of them.
Yeah.
Or could you really have characters behave in a way which is admirable or heroic? Because it's the nature of the beast that will generate so crazy and die.
Yeah. I don't see how that could be negative, because that last Star Wars picture they made, that Rogue One, everyone dies in that. So, and that was big money.
Yeah, not the same way.
not grotesquely.
No, and they're not seen to become offended themselves and driving along the way.
Okay. That would have been different for a Star Wars movie.
all of the human adult characters in the script become hideous.
Okay.
And also become frightening along the course of the event.
Right.
I mean, the mother starts out in the script as an investment banker and a very qualified character. But, when she mutates, she first of all assimilates the younger child, and then ends up growing into this spider thing, fusion of herself and the young boy who lives in the attic and wants to increasingly assimilate the other children as well.
Right.
But she's still their mother on some level. They don't have the heart to kill her. So they keep her locked in the attic and feed her. As an arc, and bad things happen to the other adult characters too. Bad things happen to Dan, I won't tell you what.
Yeah.
But they're not Hollywood characters.
No.
trying to attract stars to the movie. Really, really hard for the budget.
Yeah.
No one really wants to go through that level of horror and degradation.
Right. No, it wouldn't look, it's certainly not a way to stay glamorous anyway, but,
Man, we can't solve it by fixing the script because there's no sense.
Yeah. No, well,
it's obvious we're subvert the whole project.
Yeah.
Lighten it up, then we just have to roll the right equation of dice.
Yeah. Oh, well, at least there's still, as they say, life in the old girl yet, hey?
Yeah, it's alive. The same as the fucking Prime Minister in Monroe. There's still, like, electrochemical activity going on in the brain. It's not moving very much, but, you know, you cut it, you kind of bleed.
If you poke it, it might bite you.
Yeah, I think it's too down to quite bite yet, but it's still...
Yeah. So you got anything else in the pipeline, save that sort of stuff, or is it all... Is it all in the ether?
Yeah, I'm not shooting anything, which is really pissing me off.
Yeah. How's your book going? Autobiography.
Yeah, it'll come at some point. There was a main milestone in it.
Right.
Because the publisher asked me to write a chapter on the island of Papua New Guinea.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And I resisted this.
Yeah.
And then eventually I realized, okay, I'll write a fucking chapter on the island of Papua New Guinea.
Yeah. Did you see Kilmer's talking about it again now?
It was strange because I was just writing it yesterday involving Val Party.
Right.
I suddenly see on the internet about the party on the Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
But fortunately he only talks about the Oppenheimer's regime.
Yes, yeah.
So all I can say on that is no comment.
No.
I wasn't there.
Yeah. But the
Moreau chapter has since turned into a very lengthy report, and been slowing it down no end because turns of a novella in it and write.
Yeah, no.
It's been difficult to write because it has to be true.
Yeah.
You can't have anyone do or say something. You can't document what people said. Because otherwise you're laying yourself open to immigration.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I've been extremely cautious about my telling of them.
Right, yeah. It must be difficult because, you know, I mean, they know who, it's one of those things, you almost need to put something at the beginning of the chapter, you know who you are, in brackets, you know, without actually naming names.
I've named names.
You know, okay, right.
And I've put dialogue in the people's mouth.
Right.
But I've only put words into their mouths so I can prove they said.
Right. Yeah.
but nonetheless, I think we're with a pretty close telling of what happened from my point of view.
Yeah, because like you've always maintained, I mean, your point of view stops at a certain point, and then the rest of it is as is documented happened after your departure. So I mean, your story has a definite end, and then the rest is, you know, left to you know, others that were still around to you know, present.
Yeah, and I think people will be surprised because it's very different from the story told in Lost Soul. There's a different emphasis. See if you can edit some sense into that into the conversation.
Yeah, well, I got my work cut out for me this time. All right, Richard, mate. You take care, eh? And if you're ever stuck for a bed, mate, I got a bed in the front room. Yeah, got a bed in the front room here for you if you're ever stuck for one. If you come back down here.
Okay.
Yeah.